Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, my friends. It is so great to be back on America's Most Haunted Radio. We had a perhaps more substantial break than we planned, but I think it was really quite necessary. All kinds of crazy things going on. My family, well, my wife and I traveled to Denmark to visit my oldest son, who's been gone for 2 years, and this is the first time we've gone over there. We've seen him over here once, but so that was long overdue. That was amazing. It was only a week, which was just crazy considering the travel time here and there, but that was among the best time spent in a goodly long time. And then, of course, as we've been saying all along, we are working frantically, fiendishly, maniacally on finishing up the America's Most Haunted book. And Teresa, the world-famous haunted housewife, she's done her part. She has
Woo-hoo,
finished
I'm
up.
Done.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You.
Oh, my
Poop
God,
to you.
Such a relief.
Woo-hoo. So we finished, or I finished, I should say. So I'm the, you know, I'm the gatekeeper. Finished up the 8th chapter today, and I only have 2 more to go, and hopefully, I'm believing they will actually go quite quickly, because one is perhaps the place that Teresa knows best, so I know she did an excellent job on that, and the other one is the one we went to together, and that was Bobby Mackey's down a little bit south of Cincinnati. So I should be familiar, at least, with everything that's going on there. So I am hoping that we can actually turn this thing in within a week. Oh, my, that would be extraordinary. Wouldn't it, Teresa?
Absolutely. I'm ready to go. Let's do it. All right.
Well, me too. So for tonight's show, which we are, I don't know, up in arms, we're so excited about. It really is great to be back. I've very much missed our little weekly chats, my friends, for the last, I don't know what it's been. I guess it's been a month.
But tonight, we
welcome the director of a brand new, literally, I mean, it was out today on DVD and digital download, the documentary Monsters Wanted. We have director Brian Cunningham with us. A little bit about Monsters Wanted. It follows IT professional Rich Teach. Is it Teach Out? Is that
Teach
the
out.
Pronunciation?
That's right.
Yeah. As he quits his job like a knucklehead. No, that's what all visionaries do. And invests his life savings into opening Louisville's Asylum Haunted Scream Park. Lots more info if you want to get more info on the doc and on Brian himself, who is the director, and I guess you're the owner also of the film company, all of which is very ambitious. But you can pick up all that info, just read the page right there on the show page. Lots of great info and a link to both the Monsters Wanted site and a link to Amazon where you can pick up the DVD or the digital download. And by golly, we recommend it. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. Boy, oh, boy. As we were chatting a bit just before the show started, as always, Universal, I got a late start on this. Suddenly it occurred to me at, I don't know, 5 this afternoon, hey, you know what? I haven't seen that movie yet. I better get on that. And Brian whipped over a link, and then, you know, I'm here. This is the 1 week, I don't even know, maybe 5 years, where my wife's been gone. She's doing some training in Columbus. So I am here being Mr. Mom, and I got the 2 kids, and I got to take care of all that and whatnot. So I finally got around to starting the movie at about 9 o'clock. And it is great. I really, really enjoy it. It's really interesting. It's informative. It's amazing to get into the mindset of these people, both from those running it and those who are participating in it. There's so much more to it, I guess, like pretty much anything, that I'm sure most people realize. Is that what you came to realize, Brian? What spurred you to do this in the first place?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the things. Getting into it, I had no idea what I was in for when we started out the process. I kind of got pulled into doing this when at the time she was my new girlfriend. We'd just been dating a couple of months. let me know that she was going to stage manage a haunted house. And that was kind of interesting to me because I had been to haunted houses, but I had no idea what they were really all about. So she asked me to go to a meeting with Rich. We went to a Denny's at 10 o'clock at night. Rich was sitting at a booth, just downing cup after cup of coffee and typing furiously on his laptop. And he had been there for 8 hours. That was like his office for the Asylum Haunted Scream Park. He would just camp out at Denny's. And within 5 minutes of meeting him, I shook his hand. And he said, "Hey, I'm Rich Teachout. This week I'm going to quit my job and invest my entire life savings into making a haunted house." So that was a fun way to start the conversation. And almost immediately I was like, well, what would compel someone to do that? You know, what's behind this? So really, I just kind of got involved in it because I was curious, because I didn't know what to expect, and I wanted to know what this whole haunted house industry was all about, and definitely got more than I bargained for.
What was your filmmaking background prior to that?
I've been making movies since I was a kid. I've done it commercially and done commercial work for, you know, GE, Papa John's, things like that for 5, 6, 7 years, somewhere around there. I've lost count. And then I actually jumped into this right after I released my first feature, which was called Overtime, which had a WWE wrestler named Al Snow in it. And that was, you know, for the size of the movie, it was a huge success, got into Walmart and all that stuff. So
whoa.
I was ready to take a break at that point and then jumped straight into this because, you know, I'm incapable of standing still, I think.
Well, you had to strike when the iron was hot, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Rich said, nothing's built yet. We're building everything this week. So I picked up a phone and called my co-director, Joe Loffrey, and said, "Hey, man, you want to give up the next 6 months of your life and see what happens with these crazy Asylum Haunted Scream Park people?" And he was down for it, and so we grabbed cameras and just started shooting.
And that was in 2011?
2011. That was late June, I think, is when we started this whole thing.
So is that when they're really gearing up for it? They start that early, obviously, I guess. They have to.
They always start that earlier. That year was a little different because it was the first year for the whole Scream Park. There was one attraction that was there for 3 years before that, but this was the first year they were going to take, you know, $200,000 and put it into this and make it, you know, four attractions, one location, this big theme park. So in June, they were literally starting building. They built like a 10,000-15,000 square foot deck out in the middle of the woods, and they built all these cabins and really started from nothing. So we had the chance with the documentary to just see literally every step of the process that goes into making one of these attractions.
What was the most surprising to you? What was the most eye-opening aspect of going through that whole process with them?
Honestly, I was a little surprised that nobody got rich. I used to go to these haunted houses when I was a kid, and I'd see this line that was literally 3,000-4,000 people in line, all paying $20 a pop to get into this haunted house. They'd go through it for half an hour, come out, and that was the end. And when you just see it from that kind of myopic point of view, you know, you're like, oh, someone's getting rich here. But in reality, when you do the math on how much it takes to hire actors and do all of the building and do all of the decor and sets and props, this isn't a business model you get into to make a quick buck. I mean, these people are really, you know, it's not a sane business model. These guys are pretty borderline insane when it comes down to it. So, you know, they're doing it for the love and the passion, and it's much more mom and pop than I thought it would be. I thought it was going to be way more corporate and, you know, come in, make some money, and the fat cats, you know, go off and, you know, smoke cigars the rest of the year. But in reality, it's two people who work all year long to make this happen.
Well, of course, your window of opportunity as far as bringing in income is so short. Although I've noticed year by year by year, I've noticed the seasons are stretching out a little bit longer. It starts with the theme parks. You know, I noticed Disney, Universal. I mean, they're starting now 10th, 12th of September. So, I mean, they're getting close to being 2 months now.
Yeah, I think that's going to keep happening, too, because it's just like movies. You know, you've got these big-budget movies, so the summer movie season now starts in, like, end of April, and goes all the way through to the end of August, where it used to be just a couple of months. You know, I think once you get so much riding on these things, you know, and once people's expectations kind of go through the roof on what they want out of these attractions, you have to stay open longer just to make your money back. So I think that's going to keep happening. I think Asylum's actually opening, well, this year is different because this year Friday the 13th is in September. So they opened a week early to take advantage of Friday the 13th this year.
Oh, so they're opening that early too. Wow.
Yeah, they're opening Friday the 13th. So they're adding a weekend, and my guess is next year it's going to be adding two more weekends, you know.
Wow. What's your sense of where this particular haunt, which, I mean, at least, you know, as far as I could tell from your movie, seems to be pretty large and pretty involved, and you know, he's talking about 80 actors and whatnot. And I guess, of course, that was 2 years ago, right? So I'm guessing it's grown since then. What's your sense of kind of where does this particular haunt fit into the, you know, the overall hierarchy? Where is this in the big picture in terms of how large?
To be honest with you, and Rich might kill me if he hears me say this, I would say that they're kind of the higher end of kind of the medium-sized haunts. They're nowhere near some of the major East Coast and West Coast haunts that exist that literally are $2-3 million, you know, just to make the show happen. So there's a whole other aspect of haunting. There is that corporate side of it that, you know,
that's totally corporate,
that exists
sure.
out there. But, you know, I think that what I loved about Asylum is they're right on the edge of being, you know, almost outgrowing that mom-and-pop approach, but they're so ambitious that they're trying really hard to get as big as they can and as professional as they can. So I think, you know, that obviously makes for good drama because that's a hard line to walk. So I think it made the movie a little better.
Oh, it is. It is. You're right. Another interesting thing is, among many, is you really get a sense of it isn't just a job. It isn't just rote, you know, performing the same, monkey function. These performers really have to perform. It is theater for them.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, especially like Zombie City was, you know, Zombie City has scenes. Like you walk into a scene and character actually has a monologue and is encouraged to interact with you and has story points that he has to, you know, put out so that the next scene makes sense. So, yeah, I think it's definitely, it's not just hiding behind a tree and jumping out and saying boo anymore. It's grown up a lot.
Where do you think this is all heading? Just in the time that I've been kind of really paying attention, I've been interested, you know, kind of on and off forever. I mean, I remember the very first haunted houses ever. They were all the, you know, the JCs for a given city. It was all purely fundraising. It was really low tech. I'm remembering back to the 70s, I guess. And, you know, so, and we used to go and we thought it was fun and it was just something to do and you know, get a bunch of people together and drink in the car and head on over. But you didn't hear that. But, you know, I mean, it's just changed and grown so much just since I kind of started really paying attention again over the last few years, 5 years maybe. I mean, just year by year, there's more and more of these. Each one seems to, the ones that last anyway, because some just don't make it. They get squeezed out.
A lot don't make it, yeah.
You know, the ones that make it get bigger and bigger, more and more complicated, more and more theatrical. And now you're seeing a lot more of this kind of interactive element. Where do you think this is all going to end up?
I really think that it's going to be, I think in 5 years, it's going to be really hard to tell a difference between a good themed haunted house and a good October horror-themed play. I really think that those two are kind of merging together at this point, where people been through, you know, there's obviously still going to be kind of the jump out and scare you, you know, person chained to the wall haunted houses, because the 14, 15, 16-year-olds, that's what they want. but for kind of my generation, the late 20s, 30s, 40-year-olds that are still into this horror culture, because nowadays you can be with, you know, the way the culture's changing. You can still play video
you're allowed.
In your 30s. You're allowed to do that. Thank God. Otherwise, I'd be screwed. But for that generation, I think they want it to kind of grow up with them. So I think you're going to see a lot of story-themed haunted houses that are still scary but are more focused on giving you a story, giving you an experience, making you part of that experience. So I think it's going to be a lot more like a play where you actually are kind of a character in it.
Interesting. Teresa, what are your thoughts? Questions?
Oh, okay. I have lots of questions. First of all, I want to say I love haunted houses. I love the haunted attractions. It was the only time back when I was younger where it was okay to talk about this stuff and to be scared and to do all that stuff, because I was considered one of those weird kids because I liked this stuff year-round. And back then, it wasn't cool to talk about it, only during Halloween. So I always looked forward to going to these. And like Eric said, a lot of them were fundraiser-type haunted houses or held by the school. And they've become more and more and more and more elaborate. They have one down in Mansfield that's held at the Ohio State Reformatory. And the first time I went there, I couldn't believe they even bothered to decorate because the place is so creepy without any of the theatrics. But they do, and they turn into a theme park. But I've noticed the difference between some of these haunted houses, and I know they're kind of categorized, at least to my knowledge, as either like a very gory or like a gory scare or a startle scare. And so my questions are, for the asylum, is it based on, it sounds like the stories, like you seems to be a lot of elaborate stories. Is it gory scary? Is it startle scary? Is it getting into the story? What is it that makes the asylum different besides just that it's, you know, the mom and pop and the new one? What is it that makes it special that made you compelled to do the movie about this particular one and these people at this place?
Gotcha. Well, for me, that's two separate questions, because what made it unique wasn't necessarily what made me want to do the movie. But what they were going for, and what I think they've done pretty well, is Louisville had a bunch of good haunted houses, but they didn't have a place where, like in Louisville, going to a haunted house is kind of a family affair. But at the same time, there's not a haunted house that has, quote unquote, something for everyone. So if you go to Asylum, they've got, you know, four attractions. They've got, and one of these you actually didn't see in the movie that much, but one of them is they've got Darkness Falls on Asylum, which is your traditional scary haunted house. It's all about, you know, there's clowns and there's crazy people with chainsaws in the woods and there's jump out, pop out scares. It's, I mean, anything that can scare you. The theme is very loose and it's just about creating scenes that are going to get your heart pumping. That's, you know, for the 14-year-old guys that want to go and just get the crap scared out of them or pretend like they're not scared even though we know they all are. And then there's Zombie City, which is much more for kind of the older crowd, the late 20s, 30s, 40s, that it's about a story. They've gone to that Darkness Falls haunted attraction 1,000 times. They, even though it's well done, they know what it is, and they want something different. So they want that more story theme. And then they've also got there's an attraction called Exterminate this year, which was the zombie hunting in the movie, if you saw that, which where they actually give you an air gun, which doesn't actually shoot anything, and you walk through, like, basically a video game set and shoot zombie aliens, and then they fall over and play dead, and then you shoot them again, you know, when they get up later and stuff like that. So it's kind of got that video game element. And then finally there's the Carnival of Lost Souls, which is stage shows and games and, you know, carved pumpkins. And basically that's for the younger kids or the moms who don't want to go into these attractions, don't want to get scared, but still want to be able to hang out while, you know, Big Brother goes into Darkness Falls and gets the crap scared out of them. They want to hang out and play some games and do stuff. So really what they're trying to do is create a place where there really is something for everyone, and a whole family can kind of come together and bond over scary stuff. So that was kind of the goal of Asylum. For me,
that's a lofty goal. That's a lofty goal.
Yeah, that's a huge goal.
I'm looking at the website. Yeah, 40 acres, four attractions. I mean, that's huge. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, and that's, you know, a lot of the drama in the movie comes out of trying to balance those, you know, different styles and different types of haunts, you know, because you can't just run it all one way. So It invariably creates drama. As far as what drew me to this attraction was because, you know, not necessarily that it was going to be a family haunt, but because it was really ambitious. You know, If I wanted to make a movie about someone who was going after a dream, which this movie definitely is, that dream had better be, you know, shooting for the moon, which Rich, you know, quitting his job, taking $200,000 and putting it into a haunted house or four haunted houses. I couldn't think of anything more gutsy, stupid, and ambitious than that. So that was kind of why that one was the one that really drew my attention.
And so the audience realizes, what Rich did for this haunted house, I'm looking at it. This is 13 dates that this place is open. Is that correct? 13
it was,
dates
this
season.
The year we shot the movie, it was 12.
12, okay. So 12, 13. You're putting everything on the line for this and praying for success. Now, I could see, you know, quitting my day job to go and work at a haunted house because it's fun, it's something to do, but when you're literally putting everything, your livelihood, your everything on hold, I mean, it is amazing. I tell you what, I think it's, I give them kudos. I wish I could do something like that. Not many people follow their dreams, and this just happens to be a very, very interesting and unusual dream. So, I encourage everybody to, if you're in the Louisville area, of course, to go to the asylum, but to check out the movie as well, because I'm dying to find out how this all plays out. And especially in Louisville, because we know there's Waverly Hills there, and they do their haunted attraction at the sanatorium, and then there's the Baxter Morgue, which is not far away, and there's probably others, too. So it's
I think there's
a lot of competition.
There's 16 or 17 haunted houses in the city.
Wow.
So, I mean, I would argue, I haven't done the math on it, so I can't say for certain, but I would argue that per capita, we probably have the most haunted houses of any city our size.
Wow.
It's kind of, we are definitely a horror town through and through. So.
Well, and my goodness,
it was
fascinating to see the connection to other events like the big zombie thing, the zombie gathering.
Attack.
Yeah, with 10,000 to 12,000 people in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
Has that continued
in
subsequent years?
Yeah, that was one of those moments in the documentary where I've lived here my entire life, and I had no idea it happened. So Rich told me, you should come out for the zombie walk thing. We're sponsoring it. I'm like, okay, that sounds cool. I go there. They've got, you know, a couple of garbage cans set up. And I'm like, oh, you know, quite a few people here. There's like 70, 80 people. And I turn around, the sun sets, and I look back, and there's 15,000 people. And it's just, I'm like, wow, I had no idea, A, that anything like this even existed, and B, that it existed in my hometown. So that was kind of early on in the process, and that's where I said, you know, this might have something to it, you know. This horror culture might go a lot deeper than I thought it did. They're still going strong. Actually, Zombie Attack is Thursday of this week. It's 8:29.
I heard that. I thought, oh my
PM,
God, that's,
so.
We're almost there, you know?
Yeah, I'll be out there again, definitely. It's become a tradition for me. After I knew that happened, I'm like, well, I can't stay away. I have to get my zombie on once a year at least.
And you know what that seems to do? And I think this is not the only place where that happens. With the whole Halloween, I don't really want to call it season. It's more like a Halloween mentality.
Some of the culture. Yeah,
Halloween culture starting earlier and earlier. You know, that an event like that, something in late August, I mean, that literally kind of binds itself or is one tentpole with Halloween being the other. And I mean, you really have now created a season that's, you know, the equivalent of Christmas, certainly in duration.
Oh, yeah. It was so many people gave me this quote when I interviewed them. Halloween is second only to Christmas in the amount of money spent and time spent. And I read a statistic the other day that some people are predicting that Halloween in the next 3 or 4 years is actually going to surpass Christmas in the amount of money that's spent. Once you really get down to how much is spent on costumes and decorations, the haunted houses, all that stuff, we might actually be more, Halloween could equal itself out with Christmas. So,
and how astonishing is that, given the amount spent on gifts? I mean, it's billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah, so, I don't see the Halloween culture or the horror culture slowing down anytime soon. You look at something like The Walking Dead, which is on TV. It's like we have a mainstream, huge TV show about, zombies that has, people shooting zombies and each other in the head every week. I mean, this is not a fringe thing anymore. It's something that's really kind of pushed itself into the mainstream.
And what's also super interesting, I just, purely incidentally, on this trip we made to Denmark with a little one-day side trip to Germany and Finland, is Halloween basically doesn't exist in Northern Europe. I mean, it really is American. It is, it's like football. It is absolutely like football.
Yeah, and I was shocked because when I started releasing trailers and clips and, elements of the movie and promoting it, I was getting all these emails from people in Germany and the UK, and I got emails from film festivals all over Europe asking if they could show the movie. And I was like, what the hell is going on? Because I wasn't targeting these guys. I was really going for, we're a U.S. release only right now. So I was really, trying to find people who would actually buy DVDs. But they were finding me, and they find the movie fascinating because they don't have this over there. It's Halloween starting to slowly spread around the globe. But
yeah,
I think, this kind of unfettered, worship of blood, guts, and gore is something that they just haven't seen before and is really fascinating to them. So I just sent off a screener today for a film festival in Germany that we're supposed to screen at. So, hopefully we can introduce them to our insanity.
what I see? The tentacles spreading. And a lot of it is just because I get all these, Google alerts because I'm, tweeting out of the AM Haunted account, and I'm always looking for things. And, of course, I'm just interested in it. And I'm looking for people we're going to talk to on the radio show. And as soon as we do finish the book, we're finally going to launch a site, too. So, we're in the very broadest sense, we're trying to kind of cover the paranormal world, which absolutely and very much includes everything to do with Halloween. So, I just see these things. I get to all these press releases and just news accounts and whatever from all over the world. And what I'm noticing about Halloween, the spread of Halloween seems to be kind of, number one, through the theme parks, which are ultimately all, American, right? So you got Disney in Paris and in Asia. Asia is no problem with horror over there, though. They don't exactly have Halloween, but they certainly seem to buy into that mentality very easily, as we've talked about on a few different other episodes of this show. But, in Europe and it seems to be coming through either the theme parks because they're going to decorate and they're going to, do their themes for Halloween. So people see that. And then it's these kind of one-off events. I'm seeing quite a few, literally like Halloween night or the Saturday before or after, just depending when in the week Halloween falls, really big dress up major event parties in the big cities of Europe. I am starting to see that. So that's interesting. And, so I think the thing that's really missing is this whole trick or treat mentality. And of course, that's the your roots. You know, that's what's so firmly rooted here in the U.S. is that trick or treat mentality, because that goes back, you know, well, pretty much 100 years. And, you know, when you read your history of Halloween, of course, that I've read now, you know, 4,000 times, it's always, you know, traced back to, you know, to ancient Ireland and the Celts and their holiday that right there at the turn of the season. And, you know, sure, there's aspects of it that have of that culture that have come forth, but it's kind of really more there in the trappings of Halloween. Halloween, ultimately, I think, at least, you know, as it exists in the world now, other than, you know, Wiccans and whatnot, they're out there doing their thing and continuing on the ancient traditions. But, you know, the real holiday of Halloween as it's experienced in the U.S., you know, it's ultimately about trick-or-treating, and it's about kids and dressing up and candy, and people love to be able to be someone else for a little while.
Yeah, I think that's really, the blood gore is definitely a part of our culture that is important and is something that, you know, is going to be there forever. But I really think the core of all of this is people wanting to kind of escape themselves for a while. And I think that's core to the people working at the haunted house too. You know, they get to, these are mostly, the actors there are mostly misfits, outcasts, people that don't fit into society very easily, and the owners too. So, but at this haunted house, they put on a mask and they put on makeup and they can do, you know, whatever they want to do. They can be someone else. They can have total anonymity and they can make friends with other misfits and outcasts. So I think that's kind of getting to the core of what Halloween's all about.
Halloween thoughts, Teresa?
I love Halloween. It's my favorite time of year. I wish we could have Halloween twice a year, but then it wouldn't be so special. I think that the more and more adults are starting to enjoy Halloween. It's turning away from just being a children's holiday to being something that adults can enjoy as well. And that's why I think some of these parks and these attractions are becoming so huge and becoming really big business, as you can see in the film. But I think a lot of it is because, first of all, it's okay to talk about it, and you can be someone else. I get dressed up every year for Halloween. My children, I get angry when they don't dress up as something scary. But it is. It's their way of being something they're not. It's a break from being who you are and being able to be someone else. And I think everybody wants that. So part of the appeal of Halloween is not just that you get scared and you get thrilled and you like that. It's because you have the moment to be the person doing the scaring as well. And I think that's empowering. I think that working at a haunted house is a dream job for people who probably have a very structured type of job, something maybe very formal. And I would love to talk more to people who do that, who maybe for a living they're a nurse or a doctor or a lawyer, and they have something very, very strict, and then they can just cut loose and work at one of these haunted attractions. I think it's awesome, and I think that's the beauty of Halloween. I think it's certainly going to surpass some of the more popular holidays like Christmas. Christmas is fine. I love Christmas, but Halloween is number one, and I think more and more people are getting into it. And I think that places like the Asylum, I love that there's something for everybody there. And in the movie, do you actually get into talking to a lot of people that work there, not just Rich, not just the owner who's developing it, but some of these people that actually come and devote their fall to working at one of these haunted houses? I'd love to know some of their stories.
Yeah, I mean, we got into talking to a lot of them. Unfortunately, a lot of that stuff hit the cutting room floor just because we only had 90 minutes to tell our story. But what made it through, like, one example is Chainsaw Pete.
I was going to mention him.
Maniacal
grandfather.
But that's exactly what he is. He's terrifying and also the sweetest guy you've ever met. He'll scare the crap out of you, and then when your car won't start, he'll come over with a car battery, bear hug to his chest, and start it for you. You know, I mean, he's that kind of guy. It's kind of a weird dichotomy he's got going on. But, I mean, he just lives and breathes Halloween. He loves what he does at the asylum. If he could do it 365 days a year, he would. So, I mean, there's that. And then there's also, you meet her a little bit in the movie, Stacy, who was on the zip line in the movie. You know, for her, it's very much, hey, this is fun. It's a job. I get in. I get out. It doesn't define my life. It's just something fun that I do. So, you know, they really run the range of people, you know, of levels of commitment and obsession to some extent. One thing I did notice in doing all the interviews, especially with owners and people who run businesses that, like, you know, prop businesses and things like that for the haunted house industry, is a lot of them seem to have a background in IT. I don't know what that is, but Rich, you know, came from an IT background. I know at least three other haunted house owners in Louisville who their day job is doing IT somewhere. So, I guess if you're in that field, you also need an escape, you know, consistently every October.
Well, I imagine there's some aspects of the mentality, too. You know, you do have to be able to get from a creative vision to reality. And if you're in IT, obviously it's a broad field. We don't want to, you know, narrow it down too much, but you know, that's a field where you're kind of figuring out how to implement things, and you're, whether it be you're in software or hardware or whatever, but you're turning ideas into reality, and so perhaps that makes it easier to see, you know, your way clear through to the end, because, man, as we see in the film, and as you would just guess, I mean, it's really hard, it's really stressful. And because of the time frame, I mean, it just seems like it's a, you know, 18, 20-hour job for a few months, even just leading up to when it starts, because there's just always more to do. And you got to have so many different skills, technical skills, basic kind of building skills, people skills, administrative skills. It looked like Rich had some good in with the city. You know, my God, how helpful is that? So, I mean, you really do have to be a very broad and rounded person, I think, to be able to successfully pull it off, because, you know, it's not enough to just love Halloween and love the scare and this and that and be creative, blah, 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 blah. You also have to run it like a business if you want to come back and do it again.
Oh, yeah. There were definitely some moments I saw on Rich and Janelle's face where, you know, they had spent 16 hours building facades in the city, or they were, you know, just trying to figure out how they were going to get the right permits to be able to open, or, you know, making sure they had all the tickets that they needed and that their search engine optimization was working on the website, that they just looked at me and had this look on their face. It was like, this was supposed to be fun. We were supposed to be scaring people. When does that happen? There was a good, you know, 2-3 months before the haunted house opened where, you know, you do, you know, it's definitely that, you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, which is opening night. And you know, in the documentary, even that was extremely stressful and difficult. But the other thing that I noticed is as the season progresses and as people start scaring more and as the stresses lighten up a little bit, there is a level of, what's the word, memory loss that kind of happens where you kind of forget all the times you swore it off getting up to that and just remember the good times. And then at the end of the season, everyone, of course, is going, I can't wait to do it again next year. So,
you know who else goes through that process?
Who's that?
Mothers.
Yep.
What?
No, it's, seriously, there's all these studies that say that literally, you know, you have to learn to forget, women, mothers, have to learn to forget the pain and the discomfort of pregnancy and then especially childbirth, or else they'd never have any more, no one would ever give birth again.
Damn right about that. I tell you,
yeah,
you know,
it's like,
what?
Oh, and yeah, this is what it was like. I kind of forgot, you know. No, but you know, literally, there's some chemical or something involved with pregnancy and then actual childbirth that I don't know if it's literally memory loss, but it colors the whole thing. It sheds a positive light on it, especially in retrospect. And I mean, it just shows you how amazing evolution is, you know, that has evolved so that we can have, you know, more people and perpetuate the race. I have a question just before I forget. Why do you think Louisville is such a center for this industry? I mean, you said it more broadly. You said kind of horror in general. But what are your thoughts on why that is?
I think, honestly, it comes down to the fact that Louisville can get away with it. We are small enough to kind of, you know, nothing that we do other than the Derby, of course, is under a magnifying glass. You know, we can, you know, a single individual, someone who's really kind of, you know, screwed up in the head and a horror fanatic can have a huge impact in this city. But it's also big enough that there's enough people here to really get the ball rolling on some of these events and some of these, you know, crazy ideas. So, you know, that's kind of also why I love making movies here, is because, you know, the culture here is very accepting. It's very, you know, into new ideas and into creative endeavors, because the size of the city and the, you know, where we are in the United States, it's just like, if I walk into a place and say, hey, can I use this place to shoot a movie in? They're most likely going to say yes. You know, there's not going to be, well, what about, you know, how much are you going to pay me and all that stuff. It's just a really accepting culture. So I think that goes a long way in letting ideas that would probably be squashed in other cities really kind of flourish here.
Interesting. That and the bourbon.
The bourbon helps a lot. We've got bourbon, we've got craft brewed beer, we've got all kinds of things here that we won't talk about.
Actually, it's a really nice city. I like it quite a lot. It's you know, it's kind of southern, but not really. And in some ways, it's almost less southern than Cincinnati, which is really odd. Mm-hmm. You know. It's really quite a cosmopolitan. I went to Wittenberg in Springfield, and we had actually quite a few people, quite a few kids from Louisville, and they were really kind of all rather sophisticated and urbane. You know, you think of Kentucky, you have this, you know, kind of stereotype that, I mean, Kentucky in reality is probably one of the most varied, certainly for the size, for the population of the state, it's probably among the most varied demographically of all states, but, you know, people don't necessarily know that. And, yeah, but Louisville is a very kind of interesting, progressive, mid-sized city that could be, you know, a lot of places, but I think benefits from the fact that it's the northern south, and you have a certain amount of the bluegrass gentility, I think, you know, comes through there. But it's highly educated, and it's interesting. What is the I've kind of forgotten. What is the population of the metro area?
You know, I have no clue, like actual numbers. I know we're very proud that we're, I think, the 16th largest city in the nation. But, of course, that's the entire metro area, which is all of Jefferson County. So I'm not sure how big we are numbers-wise. And I'm not sure that it would really mean anything either. It's kind of this sprawling suburb of little cities within cities, that neighborhoods that just kind of take up the whole thing. So. Yeah, as far as the varied and diverse, you know, the diversity is concerned, what I love about the city is you can go, and I was actually shooting with a couple of guys from LA last week, and they said, do you get a lot of production here for movies and stuff? Because this could be any city. You can drive literally 15 minutes in any direction, and you can be in a cave, in a forest, you can be, you know, on the river, you can be in a place that looks, you know, fairly city-like. You know, just it's all kind of in driving distance. So, you know, I think growing up in Louisville, you do get kind of exposed to that, you know, Southern culture, but also, you know, you have some of the education and some of the opportunities that you might not have in you know, more rural areas. So I love the city. I don't think, you know, I've had the opportunity to move to L.A. a few times, and I don't think it's ever going to happen. I think I'm going to stay here until they kick me out.
Well, Teresa, you maybe we really do need to take a trip down there.
I'll go anytime. I tell you, Louisville's got so much going for it. I've only been there a couple times, but I went to school in Cincinnati, so I'm kind of familiar with the area. But just between, like, Waverly Hills, which is an amazing place, and, you know, of course, Louisville itself, the city. We were down there just before Derby Day filming a TV show that I was on a couple years ago. And the first couple days we were there, you know, it was busy, but it wasn't crazy busy. And then within 2 days, I mean, the population just exploded. Our hotel room, the rate tripled from one night to the next. Luckily, we weren't paying for it that night. That was the production company picked that up. But, I mean, it was amazing, and the people from all over. My best friend just moved down there recently from Cleveland. He loves it down there. He said it's close enough to Cleveland, where we live, so it's not that far away. People are not that different, but he said they're just a little bit more laid back. Just, you know, you get a little bit out of – they're a little bit more laid back. And there's so much good stuff in, as far as, like, paranormal and the kind of stuff that we're into. You got Scarefest going on down there, and then the haunted attractions – and then it's just beautiful. God, I would don't, you know, Brian, L.A. is nothing. I lived in L.A. for 5 years. And it's cracked up to be. If you can make a living doing what you're doing and stay in Louisville, I think that you've hit the jackpot. So.
Yeah, I feel really lucky to be able to be making movies and doing video and staying here.
So. Where did you go to school? Did you go to school there or did you go
somewhere
else?
I went to U.K., so in Lexington, I would always drive back and forth between here. I mean, I had a dorm room there, but I'd drive back and forth because I really wasn't a fan of Lexington at the time. It's grown on me. But I went to UK. I got my undergrad there. And you mentioned Scarefest. We're actually screening Monsters Wanted at Scarefest this year.
Excellent.
So,
excellent.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of our listeners will be at Scarefest. Scarefest is, like, one of the biggest. As far as more of the paranormally themed. Obviously, it's not, you know, Dragon Con or Comic Con, but Scarefest, that's kind of like the goal. And I wish we were going this year. I think maybe next year, Eric, will be our year to be invited to Scarefest.
Oh, I imagine.
You know, I would love to come down and see the screening of the movie. So what is Scarefest is coming up in September, correct?
Yeah, it's September, I think, 13th or 15th, something like that. It's that Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And we're actually screening, actually both of my movies are screening on 11:15, I think. Overtime is screening that morning. And then at 3:45 in the afternoon is when Monsters Wanted on Saturday screens. So I'll be out there all day Saturday. Come say hi.
Absolutely. God,
well, you know, that brings up a really important point I wanted to get to because we have chatted amiably for 48 minutes here. I wanted to hear what kind of reaction the film has gotten. Where has it been shown so far, and what kind of response have you got?
So far, we've only shown once, which was kind of by design. I really wanted to get the movie out on DVD and digital download as quick as I could, just because I think this kind of movie grows better and reaches its audience better by just going straight to, you know, the people who want to see it. But we showed at Fandom Fest here in Louisville end of July, which was our big premiere and, you know, sold out audiences. And everyone seemed to really, really like it. And then I've sent out reviewer screenings and stuff like that. We've gotten a bunch of good reviews. The thing that really surprises me is, and this is something that worried me throughout the whole process, I couldn't figure out what our audience was, whether our audience was horror fans, people who were into, you know, haunted houses and horror, or whether they were, like, you know, kind of more you know, art house documentary kind of fan. And as I've sent out screeners and gotten reaction, it seems like both crowds really like the movie and both love it for completely different reasons, which is really fun for me.
Yeah, that's great.
You know,
best of both
worlds.
Horror
fans love it because it's like that, you know, I get that, and I'm glad someone has caught, you know, what I'm so passionate about. And then the documentary fans are like, I had no idea. You know, they just love it as kind of this window into a culture that they didn't even know existed. So, you know, I'm so far we've gotten great reactions. I'm hoping that continues as we move forward with the release in the next couple of weeks.
Where else are you showing it? What other festivals or gatherings do you have lined up?
Next is Scarefest in Lexington. We just got accepted to the Orlando Film Festival. So we'll be showing Friday night movie there. And then there's a German film festival that, like I said, I just sent away a screen or two that wants to show it, but I don't have details on that yet. So your German fans will have to come to monsterswanted.com and keep stay updated if they want to go see it there. So those are the only screenings we've got lined up now. I mean, really, I'm kind of doing a little bit of an experiment with this one and really pushing it to iTunes and DVD more directly and just trying to really open up a dialogue with people who are catching it via, you know, digital download and just let me know what they think and, you know, trying to cut out the middleman and just go straight to the audience with this one.
And
right.
How can they get it on DVD or digital download? What is the best way for people who won't be able to go to Scarefest to see the movie? Should they go to the website or iTunes?
Yeah, if they go to our website, monsterswanted.com, there's a banner right across the top that has whatever outlets are available. It'll have links to them. So right now it's just iTunes and DVD. Google Play and Amazon Instant should be coming online in the next week or so as they crawl slowly forward with their technical stuff. So, yeah, if you just go to monsterswanted.com, there's links right at the top. You can't miss it to catch the movie on DVD and digital.
Excellent. Excellent.
Very
well,
exciting. Well, I am positive you're going to really like it, Teresa. And like I said, I've only seen 40 minutes, so I got to finish it off, too. I don't even know how it ends. But I'm glad to hear that in the broadest sense that the attraction has continued to do well and is still going strong. That I'm happy to hear. I'd be very depressed.
They kept going, so there's that. But I honestly think Rich could have, the entire place could have burned down. He could have lost all his money and his house could have blown away in a tornado and he still would have come back for a year or two. I mean, that's just his
focus.
He was not going to stop at any point. So.
He's focused and he's caffeinated. That boy is caffeinated.
Absolutely. He's a big fan of, I don't know if I can say Mountain Dew, but I'm going to say it. He's a big fan of Mountain Dew. So,
and coffee.
We were going to go.
Rich, let me ask you just to touch on that point real quick. Do you happen to know, like statistically, how many of these type of places do not make it to year two? Or what is the likelihood of a independently owned haunted house or attraction like failing, like not making enough money to continue?
Consider this anecdotal because I don't have like hard numbers, but I've heard numbers thrown around by different haunt owners that it's as much as 2 out of 3 haunts don't last through their first 3 years.
Yeah. Wow. It's like
yeah,
a small.
I think I think a lot of the haunt owners had that mentality I had, which is, hey, I can come in, throw this together, charge $20 a ticket, and I'll make a bunch. And they don't have a 5-10 year plan for when that doesn't happen. And I think those are the ones that kind of go away quickly because unless you're planning for that 5-year cash flow, you're going to have some real problems.
Wow.
Have you seen the documentary? I should have looked it up because we actually covered it on this show. Although, actually, no, I think we did it on Storytellers, now that I think of it. But, you know, around a year ago or less, another one came out, and those were about home haunters, very specifically.
It was called The American Scream. And
exactly.
Deep into editing this, I'm guessing we shot the same year because I was deep into editing this when they announced that that was coming out, and I got a little bummed out and immediately wanted to go watch it on Netflix. And Kaylee, who's a co-producer and also my girlfriend, just grabbed me and said, no, don't touch it. Don't look at it until you're done.
Right.
Like, don't let it influence anything. So I still haven't actually seen it. So that's actually, I've been meaning to get to it. Once the DVD came out, and I'm like, okay, well, I can't change anything now. I guess it's time to go watch that other hot doc. So, was it good?
It's really
you
different. I mean, it took this long, you know, 55 minutes into the discussion for me to even think about it. You know what I mean? It didn't even really, I did this other one. It's so different because it's focused on literally home haunts and this neighborhood. It's basically a neighborhood in this one town in Massachusetts, I believe it is. And, it's kind of greater Boston area. And, you know, it's how each of these families goes about doing it and what it means to them and what they get out of it and why they do it. And it's very interesting. It's actually, you know, it's a much smaller scale. Yours feels bigger to me for some reason. I don't know if that's just the, you know, technique or editing or production value. I'm not sure. But, you know, and even that's not putting it right. Theirs is more intimate. That's what it is. It's very intimate. And so it's good. It's very interesting from that standpoint. And, you know, it just shows you how obsessive people can be because they're not making money. I mean, none of them are making any money. You know,
right,
it's just for fun. And you know, some of them are viewed as kind of the – the town weirdos because of it. You know, I mean, they're admired, I think, to a certain extent, but some of them maybe more so than others. You know, so it's different, but it's, I mean, absolutely. You should see it now that yours is done, and I'm sure you'll find it interesting and you know, the compare and contrast. But it's a different approach. You know, yours is more focused on a single entity and kind of everything to do with that entity. And it's a larger entity and there's many more people involved in that entity. Whereas theirs is, you know, it's an intimate look at these various families and the various family configurations and what they do. I mean, what they do is amazing and the time and the effort. I mean, some of them literally work it year round because they need that much time because they're building things, they're putting things together. You know, they're not just going out and buying things because they can't. It's just too expensive.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of it's about the ingenuity and the drive and what makes it worthwhile and literally the transformation. These are these people's homes. You know, where are they living while this is going on? You know,
what's interesting too, and I talked to Rich a little bit about this, is I want someone to make that middle ground movie because mine is about like the haunted attraction, you know, going for it business wise. And then there's the movie about the home haunters. Most of the people who own haunted attractions were home haunters to start with. I mean, that's like the gateway into owning your own haunt. So I'd really love to see something that kind of follows people, you know, at what point do you really just take that step and take what you're doing as a home, you know, thing and jump into it professionally. That's really
that transition, right. That transition.
So maybe someone will come along and make that and it can be like the haunted house documentary trilogy.
You're right. You'll have to show them back to back. And I agree. That would be very interesting. Well, you know, the other element is it's just how ambitious are you? And, you know, your guy, Rich, he's an ambitious guy. And he put his money where his mouth was. You know, these people, the home haunters, you know, they're not putting $200,000 into it. I mean, they may be putting $2,000. They may even be putting more than that. You know, I mean, there are conflicts within these families on how much, you know, dad spends on the home haunt every year. You know, they're not going on vacations. They're not doing this. They're not doing that because of it. And there's give and take with that. But, you know, none of them are at the level that Rich is. Really interesting. Oh, really super quick, the one that we didn't get to at all that I thought was a very interesting part of the film, it's actually kind of where I had to turn it off as you were getting out of that segment, was the Transworld show. That looked like it was fascinating. You seemed kind of amazed by it.
Oh, yeah. Transworld was one of those things that it was this other moment besides Zombie Walk where I kind of walked in and was just like, holy crap, this is... I mean, that was, Zombie Attack was like, oh, this is a huge cultural thing. Transworld was, wow, this is a big business. You know, it was, all these people set up and everyone's having a blast and everyone loves what they're doing. But at the same time, they're talking numbers. They're talking, how much does this animatronic cost? What can I do with this? How can I retrofit this to fit into this? Transworld was this great kind of surreal moment where all these adult kids playing with their toys, but also trying to figure out how they're going to make money with it at the same time. So it was way bigger than I expected and really cool.
Yeah, it's amazing, and I'm sure that's growing year by year too. I've looked at that from another perspective too, in that we had the Making Monsters, we had the Edmonds, Ed and Marcia on the show back. I don't know when it was on the air last. They're coming back on here, I think, in September. But that perspective was fascinating too. You know, how are these things created? And they typically are working, at least with their custom building anyway, with the really big haunts and even the theme parks and whatnot. But that is amazing too. Just the recurring theme of that show is just how much this has grown. You know, it just started with him making masks, by hand, however many years ago. And they don't give a bunch of numbers on the show, but it's obviously quite a large and successful business that they have created making these things, and it's very complicated and very technical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's there's a lot of partnerships that go on, and just walking through and seeing kind of this whole support structure that's built around these haunted houses. It's really not just these guys opening haunted houses and buying stuff off the shelf at Walmart. It's a whole industry that's built around it that just continues to grow with each kind of artist specializing in more and more detailed specific things. There's people who just do masks. There's people who just do, fake knives. It really gets down to these tiny kind of niche specialties that kind of support this whole industry. It's huge.
All right. Well, what a pleasure speaking with you. It's a really great film, and I think our listeners will really enjoy it. Obviously, they are predisposed towards such things, but it's very well made. I mean, it's not just an interesting topic, but it's a very well made film, and I really enjoyed it. And wish you certainly nothing but the best, and I hope we can meet up. It sounds like we need to make a trip down there, and certainly if we're going to come down to Louisville, we would absolutely want to meet you.
Yeah, please do. Just shoot me an email and let me know what's going on.
All right. Well, good luck with it. I hope it finds every possible viewer, everyone who could possibly be interested. I hope find it, and
that all depends on everyone going to monsterswanted.com. I'm sorry, I had to get one more plug in there.
You got to do it. All right, well, thank you very much. Once again, we've been speaking with Monsters Wanted director Brian Cunningham about his documentary film, Monsters Wanted, all about the pursuit of excellence in the haunted attraction biz, based on a single haunt in Louisville, the Asylum Haunted Scream Park. And it's amazing. It's fascinating. It's very dramatic and visually appealing. It's great stuff. Well, Teresa, it's great to be back on the air. Nice speaking with you in semi-public once again. Really enjoyed it. really enjoyed speaking with Brian, and we're starting to get some cool guests lined up. We're always kind of dialed into the TV shows, of course, and we got a bunch of them starting up here in September and October, so we'll be getting to those. And it's fun to be back on the air. I hadn't realized how much I've missed it. And hopefully next week, next Tuesday night, we'll be able to announce that we have turned in the America's Most Haunted book.
Woohoo, I hope so. Yeah, it's great to be back. Thank you so much for joining us, Brian. Everybody, check out Monsters Wanted. Go see them at Scarefest and tune in to America's Most Haunted. Next Tuesday, we will be back. And happy to be back. All right, everyone. Have a good evening. Good night.
Good night. Have a great week.